in the first day of the retreat together, we placed the emphasis on the mindfulness of breathing. This particular meditation practice is one of simply bringing our attention back again and again to the breath, and therefore making the breath the primary object. So in other words, we are giving bare attention to the bare experience, the bare actuality of just breathing in, just breathing out, and mindful of that. No two breaths are the same. The experience of breathing in and breathing out has its influence in terms of varying sensations. Sometimes the breath is long, or it's short, or it's somewhere in between. Sometimes the breath is flowing smoothly. Sometimes it's rather rough. So we give care and attention to mindfulness of breathing. So out of all the objects, we might say, that are in the world, we select one, we turn our attention to it, we establish as much as possible a clear and steady relationship to it, and while giving attention to the breathing, we are aware and we notice the variety of changes that are taking place as we breathe in, as we breathe out. In the Dharma teachings, there are two aspects or features of meditation. One is called Samatha, S-A-M-A-T-H-A, and that means calmness, serenity, tranquility, inner peacefulness. So an important feature of these meditations is to develop and cultivate calmness of being. The mindfulness of breathing is a helpful and beneficial resource for that, helping to reduce some of the pressures and tensions in the body, in the mind, in the heart. Contributes to the reduction of stress, the sense of inner well-being, and a very helpful resource to deal with the pressures of life. So sometimes we're under pressure, somebody may be shouting at us, we may feel that there's a lot that we have to do, we may be caught up in a lot of pressurized thinking. And if we have established a sound and solid practice of mindfulness of breathing, it can serve and act for us as a very good friend. That, in other words, we turn our attention to the breathing, relaxing with the breathing, and so taking some of the tension and pressure out of the situation. Whether that pressure is coming from outside in various ways, or it's coming from within ourselves, or from both. So mindfulness of breathing is an important and helpful contribution here and in daily life to more calmness and clarity, to feeling much more inner peace, to be much more at ease both with ourselves and with others, simply because we remember and we are able just to breathe in and breathe out in a relaxed way. It is helpful to give in the mindfulness of breathing plenty of care and attention to the exhalation, to the out breath. Quite often it's on the outgoing breath that our mind tends to wander, drift away, space out. So if we give lots of care to the in-breath, lots of extra care to the exhalation, and just experiencing the simple actuality of breathing in, whether it's long or short or in between. Feeling and experiencing the air going through the nose down into the body, feeling some expansion in the lungs, in the chest area as we breathe in, feeling some settling down and relaxation on the out-breath. Sometimes with the breathing, there are moments for between the breath going out and the body requiring air element to come in for the next breath. Can we just stay rather clear, rather calm, rather steady in those moments, so that when the body needs to breathe in, we are present for that, we are receptive to that, so that the in-breath can come in quite naturally. If we're feeling rather tired in the sitting meditation, it can be helpful to quietly breathe in a little bit longer, a little bit deeper, retain the air in the lungs for a few seconds longer. That can help to stimulate some of the cells to feel the air in the body before we breathe out. So the mindfulness of breath serves as a resource for calmness, peacefulness, stability, sense of well-being and harmony. That's the samatha aspect of it. And the vipassana aspect of it is the seeing clearly, seeing the changes, just experiencing the body drawing in air from the environment and breathing out. The insight aspect of it, vipassana means seeing into, seeing clearly, insight into, vipassana. In that, sometimes we see our relationship to many other aspects of life. In other words, the story of our life can be found in our single sitting. How are we at the beginning of the sitting? How are we at the middle of the sitting? How are we at the completion, in the last period of the sitting? And sometimes the way we relate to one sitting meditation can rather tell us a lot about how we relate to many other things in our day-to-day life. In other words, coming in to sit, do we settle in quickly? Is the mindfulness of breathing practice getting underway at the beginning? How are we during the middle period of the sitting practice? How are we at the end? Also, the mindfulness of breathing can be a great resource for dealing with pain. And sometimes with the pains that are arising in the body, the breath can serve as a help and as a support, just to keep breathing, plenty of relaxed breathing, especially in the outgoing breath, and just to breathe through the pain, so that we're not fighting it, we're not resisting it, we're just allowing the breath to be a support for painful experiences wherever they might be arising in the body. So, as the Buddha commented, of all the meditation practices, he says he finds that the mindfulness of breathing is the one which is the most helpful, the most useful, and can bring a great deal of inner depth, inner contentment, inner peace, inner joy. And the very mindfulness of breathing can be a great resource for liberation itself. So therefore it has the features of samatha and vipassana, calmness and insight. We then, in the retreat, we began to expand out our field of attention a bit further, and in that to give care and attention to the physical life, to the body. In contact with the body, it's learning to see clearly body as body, learning to bring mindfulness and attention to the physical life, and learning to see the physical life just as the physical life. In other words, as vibrations and sensations, as bare experiences, as interactive elements. Sometimes the element of earth, meaning solidity, is what we feel mostly with the body. Sometimes we might be feeling the element of heat or coolness in the body. We might be feeling the element of liquid, blood running through the veins or sweating. We might be feeling, as with mindfulness of breathing, the air element running through the body. So in our meditation, we give care and attention to seeing the body as body. So much and so often in our life, the sense of I, this again as I referred last night, identification with, easily happens with regard to the body. We say, I am sitting here, and therefore the I has arisen, it's landed on the body, and it's identified with the body, and it says, I am sitting here. The I doesn't know how to sit. I is just I, it's a little line in the mind. The body does the sitting. I has never sat in its life. How could it? If I could sit, then there'd be the body sitting, and then there would be an I sitting. It would be rather strange. So the I lands as, oh, I am sitting here. But in fact it's the body which is doing the sitting. The I thinks it's sitting. No chance. So our meditation and our awareness and our observation is to see body as body. Sometimes, as the Buddha said, there's the outer body and the inner. Nothing esoteric about that. Outer body is when we're concerned with the appearance of body. So that might show itself in how we look. It might show itself in the size of the body, or the shape of the body, or the gender of the body, or concepts around the body, whether it's beautiful or ugly, or can't make up one's mind, or whatever. Or sometimes we start obsessing about particular features of the body, as though a few centimeters here or there really make a huge difference to existence. Some people, they do, and they go to the surgeon or whatever. So again, the perception of the body. There, are we concerned with the outer appearance? As we know, there's huge pressure on all young, middle-aged and old alike around appearances of body. See the body in the body, it's the instructions of the Buddha, see in the body is to get cut deeper, to go deeper than this outer concern with the body, just to see body as elements. See the body, experience the body as organic life, to feel the body as vibrations and sensations, see it as, feel it as DNA, anything but be obsessing around the appearance of the thing. And in that we learn to have a more comfortable, relaxed relationship. How much of our sense of self-worth, how much is our preoccupation with the body just around the external size, weight, shape, gender, form, this, that and the other, and even health and energy and sickness and age and colour, all these things can preoccupy. Go through that bubble, cut through that preoccupation, then we just come to body as body, vibrations and life and energy and vitality, and experience it much more just at that, and that will help us immensely to feel much more at home with the being, much more at home with the body as organic life. And that comes not through nice ideas, it comes through seeing the fact, seeing the reality. All the preoccupation with appearances, it's all in the mind. If we get to see body as body, less of this being conceived as body. We then expanded out the field of attention and various ways that we can explore that, and one important aspect of all of that is listening. So sometimes in the listening, the meditation, it shows itself in such periods of time as this, obviously. So We give care to the posture, and the listening is the meditation. And with the listening, hopefully there is some receptivity. With the listening, it's just listening. How often you and I now listening to others in day-to-day life, we hardly listen because inwardly there's all the reactivity that can be going on. We may be listening to others, but inwardly we're dying to say something. Inwardly we can be withdrawing. Inwardly we can be reacting, etc. So the poor person is listening, who is speaking, thinks, oh, I'm speaking, therefore the other person is listening. Sometimes this is becoming a rare event in the universe. And speaking requires listening, otherwise what's the point of the speaking? So that requires a receptivity. So we put a lot of emphasis here on the listening. So there's listening to the instructions, there's listening in the small groups, there's listening to the teachings, there's listening to the inquiry, there's the listening in the one-to-one. And then there's a certain trust in that listening to see, is there something, as the Buddha said, use a lovely measure here, is it true and useful? That's the criteria. Sometimes we say something to another, it's true, whatever, we may have great insights into their wretched personality, and it's true, but it's not very useful. The person feels miserable, despairing, hopeless, it just feeds self-blame, etc. So again, it's both what is true and what is useful. So our listening aspect of listening is a very important feature, and many opportunities obviously in day-to-day life. In the realms of themes to listen to, listening to the Dharma, which points to calmness, which points to insight, which points to wisdom, which points to liberation, is regarded as the very best thing in life to listen to. Of course I would say that, I'm a Dharma teacher, but I mean it as well. So there's much which you and I have to listen to, but the listening which helps us to see clearly, the listening which contributes to our understanding, the listening which helps us to work with our tendencies, the listening which opens up our heart, such as the loving kindness meditations, the metta meditations, listening which gets us out of our small box or out of our imprisonment in the shell of identification. All of that kind of listening is worthwhile listening. We don't know in our meditations on listening what touches us. We don't necessarily know what goes deep inside of us. And so that we will see in the course of time how our being responds. So sometimes we might just hear the instruction of be here and now, be present. And it really strikes for us, it really touches a deep place inside of us. The outcome of that, it's gone deep, it stays with us. When something has gone deep and is worthwhile and is valid for us, then it goes from language to truth. It goes from a communication to an understanding, because the understanding is manifesting, is expressing. Here and now matters in life. There's much to be discovered in it. We may listen, and in the listening we hear about impermanence, that nothing is worth clinging to, simply because it changes, and therefore what was may not be what is. And that can apply to anything in life, including our own existence. And we hear, impermanence, non-clinging, may touch a deep place inside of ourselves, and in that touching of a deep place inside of ourselves, the value of that, the truth of that, has registered for us, and it becomes an important understanding, an important wisdom for us in daily life. We can listen and we hear, as I just mentioned, with mindfulness of breathing, And you say, yes, let me practice this, let me explore this, so that times of pressure, of anxiety, of emotional upheaval, of difficulty, or when I just need to be more concentrated or more focused, let me just anywhere, train, bus, at home, in the office, anytime, we just practice a few minutes of mindfulness of breathing, help to get us focused, help to get centered and grounded. Why does that come? Because one's realized and understood the truth of its value, the truth of its significance, and therefore it becomes a great resource for us. So, as I say, in our meditation and our listening, it can be rather hard to know today or tomorrow what's run deep with us, what's really of value, what is true for us, and what is useful. And the more the truth touches us, and the more useful it is, the more it's opening up our life, freeing up our life. Similarly with the loving kindness meditations as well. And this morning Brian wrote some basic reminders with regard to the loving kindness meditations as one of many resources in life to open up the heart. When working with the body, two or three aspects of this primary one, as I say, to be in touch with body as body, just to see it clearly. And sometimes there are areas of the body which are uncomfortable and difficult, and sometimes the mantra of "Om my poor knees" is far more repeated than "Om mani padme hum." And sometimes we're not sure how long to stay with the pain. The more that you and I can just be aware of the changes that are going on, not fighting it, not resisting it, relaxing into it, then more opportunity to expand our pain horizons, to open up the area there. Otherwise we can live in a small bubble again of what I can't deal with, what I can't cope with. And the human beings have a remarkable capacity to actually cope with the most difficult of conditions. So sometimes, of course, it's difficult in here, and one of the things that make it difficult is the pain that arises. Yet if we explore and work with it, and then when it feels too much, when it feels too hard and too difficult, then we use our wisdom, we use natural intelligence, okay? We stretch the legs, we bend the knee out, we move the back forward, or whatever seems appropriate, so that we're challenging ourselves, we're expanding our capacity to work with the situation, but we're using our wisdom as well. Wisdom to stay with the moment, or wisdom to change the form of the body to release the pain. And we just see through our own experience what's workable for us with regard to that. Sometimes, as a number of you were pointing out in the referring to in the small groups or in the one-to-ones yesterday, sometimes emotions arise. These emotions which arise can be quite strong and quite intense, and it's a very, very, very normal feature of day-to-day life on the retreats, and it can come quite unexpectedly. You know, just sitting having a nice quiet day, and then sometimes there's a major volcanic eruption going on inside, and one wonders, where did all that one come from? And one just has the memory of some poor devil that one knows, and then woof, it's all there, the jealousies, the fears, the angers, the confusion, the turmoil, the worry, the grief, the sadness, etc. And so in those times the primary object, to use the technical language, is the experience itself of the emotion, and there is a certain kind of intensification of the emotion. It can go on, so it goes from a bare feeling, in this case unpleasant, And very, very quickly, huge waves can come. But we have to remember, and always an important thing to remember, that the storyline that goes with the emotion and the feeding of the story tends to feed the emotion. One thing we should learn in life is learn this one. So a wave comes up about something, past or present, somebody else, oneself, one's life, somebody else's life, whatever it could be. And it brings a lot of emotion. And often, not always, but very often, there is a story around it. Then we start thinking about the story. This happened, and that happened to me, and da 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 da. And it could be from childhood, it could be in the present, it could be imagining what will happen in the future. And that story, as we think about the story, it's the same as putting wood on a fire to put it out. It's not a very good method. And so we start getting into the story, so much so that it can consume sittings and food times. One goes to bed at night and the old emotional motor won't turn itself off, and one can't sleep at night, and the first thought in the morning is back to the story, back to the drama, back to the soap opera, and all these waves can keep going on. But it needs the story. Emotion has to feed on something, and it's got to feed on the belief in it. It's got to feed on the thoughts about it. It's got to feed on the pictures, the ideas, the views, the opinions, the projections, the interpretations. It needs all of that for the emotional wave to sustain itself. Any strong emotional wave that we experience will be felt in the body. It will always, you'll always find it in the body somewhere. And so part of our practice with the emotional waves is to move away from the story about it and to turn the attention to the actual emotional feeling that's inside the body. And sometimes the location is very clear and obvious. Sometimes some people will say, well, I really feel it in my chest. I really feel the pressure. I really feel the contraction. I really feel the experience going on in the chest. Another person would say in the diaphragm, or in the stomach, or in the guts, or whatever. And another person may say, well, I feel the pressure in my head or on my shoulders, anywhere. So our working with the emotions here is the turning of the attention to where we're feeling it inside the body, to put the power of the mindfulness to that area, to feel that area through. It's unpleasant, it's strong. Sometimes we go to that area and the wave gets even stronger, so we allow the wave to run through. Then we come back to that location as quickly as possible inside the body and feel what that feeling is. And as the Buddha said, to feel, the words are to feel the feelings in the feelings, to feel the feeling in the emotion. And sometimes we lose it, then we're back into the story, back into the drama, back into all the content. Okay, we're clear about that. We return quietly as possible back to what we're feeling in the body. We do it again and again and again and again until the fire starts to go out. And when the fire starts to go out, the waves get much smaller and we can begin to feel in the feelings there, more settled, and perhaps out of that some insight will come. Perhaps out of that greater calmness of being, some understanding will come. We may understand the story better. And one of the signals for change in emotional difficulty and pressure, that if we have, as I said, gone into it in the feelings in the body, observing it, relaxing into it, noticing change that's going on with it moment to moment, one of the indications that we have gone deep is that the story feels to be less of a problem. That will tell us. when we're caught in the drama of the issue and the story is going on, the story around it really seems to be some kind of unresolved problem. That means there's pressure from the emotion to the story and the story to the emotion. It feels unresolved. It feels very, very difficult. It feels very distressing.
Or whatever.
But when we have let go of the story, when we have turned the attention into the feeling life inside the body and just quietly worked with that again and again, as that cools out, in the cooling of it out, when our attention goes back to the story doesn't seem so bad. It doesn't seem so problematic. And therefore we feel more trust, and we feel more confident to be able to deal with it. And that will tell us we're in the right place. That will tell us, oh, I'm working with this emotional issue, this difficult issue in my life, because I've actually felt it through, I've actually gone into it within myself there. And it might be some clear moment and we feel more comfortable, and then unexpectedly another wave of that reaction comes, another wave of this problem starts to arise. It should not invalidate the work we have done already. We say, yes, it's strong, there's another wave to deal with. So when then we go back to that wave, we work with that wave and we keep working with it. And sometimes people who have done this, and over the years of course worked with thousands of people, actually the whole relationship between an emotion and a story actually begins to be accommodated. We actually begin to feel much more okay about it. Buddha said with this, he says, as with wood, the fire may go out. The fire of it is when we're really caught up in it. The fire may go out, the wood may still be hot. So the fire may go out, the story around it may be much quieter, but we're still rather vulnerable. We're still rather susceptible to falling back into the story and then once again lighting up the wood again, and we're back into it again. And we look at the major dramas of our life about anything like that. This relationship of story to emotion is one of the most important relationships that we have. And if we work carefully with this one, it really can transform our whole way of being in life and the issues of life that you and I have to attend to, and quite often quite unexpectedly. That the practice of this working with feelings, working with emotions, which so much a part of the Dharma teaching, so often the Buddha has spoken about feelings, unbelievable amount of time, reference to the importance of feelings in life, can be applied and practiced in the sitting meditation, can be applied in the walking, in the standing, in quiet times, in one's room, just watching that interaction that's taking place, and just remembering, the key remembering, come back to the body, come back to what the feeling is inside the body, see the changes in that location that are taking place again and again and again, till it actually starts to become rather effortless. It's what we begin to do rather naturally, and that gives us more clarity, then we can respond more wisely. Sometimes the wisdom says, here is something which I need to accept. You've been in a relationship, the person said, thank you, au revoir, shalom, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. So all the jealousy, the anger, the hurt, the reactivity, the thoughts for revenge, all the emotional waves that go with it, it ain't going to make any difference. The person has said shalom. That's it. So all the fighting inside is all the reaction with the story. As we go deeper, sometimes what we see is this is something to accept. Accept. People have the right to say hello, the right to say I love you, and the right to say I don't love you anymore. That's people's right. For all the reasons that may happen. And sometimes we look and we go deeper into ourselves, and in the experience of going deeper into ourselves, we see it's not acceptance. Some change is needed. And the more clear we are, the more relaxed we are with our feelings, the more skillfulness and wise attention, again another favourite phrase of the Buddha, this application of wise attention to a situation, and we can see not only what needs to change, but we haven't consumed all our energy and all our feelings on the story and the issue, so there's the energy there to make the changes. It's not only saying to ourselves, I need to make a change, but the empowerment to actually bring it about. And therefore, all that energy that we lose in the drama, we are conserving for either acceptance, if it's that's necessary, or for change. Or sometimes people will say, Christopher, I just don't know. Is it acceptance or is it change? And all the thinking about it won't give you the answer. And going to poor devils like me, I can't give you the answer either. Because you can go to one teacher, as some people do on retreats. They say, oh Stephen, do you think I should accept this situation or should I change it? So Stephen might say, change it. Come to me, I say acceptance. Another teacher may say, decide for yourself. And the other teacher say, well, don't change, don't accept, do something else. So sometimes going to other people, we can get four or five different views about what we should do with our life, from inside and outside. So sometimes if we don't know, when sometimes we don't know, do I change or do I accept? Then let's be with not knowing. Let's say, I just don't know. And just rest with that and trust with that. It's not easy. And live with that, and live with that kind of questioning, not knowing, and see how life moves us, see what comes out of it. Something will come out of it. All this is part of our exploration to wake up our life, to open up our life, to experience and sense our freedom of being. Just finally, just a few small reminders. It's often a little easier for those of us sitting up around here because it's quieter, but with the good door over there, there's a good percentage of dedicated yogis over there who so far have been very kind and very tolerant with the human traffic there. So the request is that if we could be in the meditation hall within the first 5 minutes of the sitting meditation, so that after 5 minutes we'll know that everybody is who's going to be here is here, and therefore the door won't be opening and closing every few minutes, sometimes for 10, 15, 20, 25 minutes, and it's a little bit unsettling for the good yogis over by the door there. Look at that, prophetic. And and sometimes one, in the course of the sitting, one needs to be out or get out there. Sometimes it's because of, we say in English, the call of nature, fair enough. There. And sometimes there's just too much pressure inside, and it's just too hard to sit. Fair enough. But if you do leave, then please to continue your meditation, your practice out of doors, outside the meditation hall, rather than coming back in again. With the small groups as well. Sometimes in the small groups, we run over the time a little bit. So if it does, then perhaps to do the sitting outside, so we keep to the guideline, which is a good support for us all, but especially for all of you good folk who are near the door there. You know, that the people coming in within the 5 minutes, so that will leave 40 minutes of pretty good silence there. The other aspect, some of you have done retreats with other teachers, and sometimes the general kind of guidelines or rules vary a little bit. What I've got in mind here, some retreats say absolutely no eye contact with anybody. They're very kind of this, some rather strictness. We don't have this on these retreats here. So with regard to that, if you don't want to have any eye contact with anybody, it's very easy. You just observe the earth, and then you... It is very unlikely that anybody would be crawling underfoot to have a look. They might do. Strange things go on retreats, I have to say. So watch any kind of reaction. So sometimes a person makes eye contact with us, but to be watch all kind of reactivity of why are they doing it? Why are they looking at me? What's wrong with me? Etc. etc. Or what's right with me? Maybe. So again, sometimes in the eye contact, we may have friends here, may have some connection in some way with another or others. Just because some kindness, some warmth, some appreciation comes through our eyes, please have no expectations that it's going to come back. Just because we express warmth and appreciation through the eyes, which can happen, that therefore the other person's going to glow with happiness at the contact. Person may not do. They may be into a complete drama and not interested. Or they may not even notice it, or whatever. Part of our practice is with the eyes and eye contact, by its presence or by its absence, is there any reactivity? It's part of the practice of looking at seeing if there's reactivity via eye contact. And as I said, if you wish to be rather without eye contact, keep the eyes lowered, and others will be respectful to that. As we mentioned on the first day, evening, that great majority, 80 of you or so, are here for the full period, but there are a few people who are here part-time and come for a few days and have their full okay from the staff and from the teachers with regard to it. They haven't run away. And similarly, Stephen hasn't run away screaming back to Clill anything, but was giving some teachings last night in Tel Aviv, and will probably come back Thursday afternoon. No, he'll come back sometime this morning there. All right, so let's have a little bless him. With our beards, people are telling us we're getting more and more alike. We were talking about my sunglasses yesterday, and somebody said I should get a pair of those round sunglasses, like glasses like Stephen has. Then we really will be Tweedledum and Tweedledee. Oh dear, lovely. All right, don't tell him. There he is. Stephen is one of the most beautiful human beings I know. He's a very, very special person. And we're all blessed and privileged to know him, really. Very special. Right, let's have a little sitting together, shall we?